For the final installment of our summer reading series on underappreciated writers, we'll take a look at the life and work of Christina Stead. She's been called one of the most important Australian writers of our time, and yet she struggled for recognition her whole life, remains little known today, perhaps due to a number of factors. Her often scathing looks at family life and love made some readers uneasy, and she had a rather troubled private life as well. Hazel Rowley, who published a biography of Christina Stead in 1994, joins me now to talk about her. What a pleasure it is to have you here. By the way, her latest biography is called Tête à Tête, Simone de Beauvoir and Jean-Paul Sartre, which will be released by HarperCollins in October. So is Christina Stead famous in Australia, even though her most famous book takes place in the United States?
Well, you know, she's not, which is so tragic. And I was thinking about it just the other day, and I think that Christina Stead's greatest strength is also her tragedy. She was the best writer I know at picking up local colour, voices, preoccupations. You know, her 14 novels, she set them in America, actually only two were set in Australia, which is part of her problem, and in Europe and all over the place, picking up the local colour, perhaps like D.H. Lawrence, perhaps even more striking than him. But that means she's not an Australian writer. You know, do you stick Christina Stead in Australian studies courses if 12 of her 14 novels are set in the U.S. and Europe? No.
Was she widely read anywhere during her lifetime?
Well, her high time really was the 30s. Her first books were published in 1934, Seven Poor Men of Sydney and The Salzburg Tales. And they were highly praised in New York and London simultaneously, you know, by the top reviewers, Clifton Fadiman and others. And then then came the war and other things.
But then her most famous book, at least the one that everybody remembers the title of, is The Man Who Loved Children. That was set in Maryland. Did she want to set it in Maryland?
No, well, that's a good question. I mean, this is a very sad story, really, that a tragedy is concerned, is linked with her most famous novel. She wanted to set The Man Who Loved Children in Sydney. She wanted to write an autobiographical novel about her very difficult, troubled childhood, living in this house which was then on the edge of Sydney Harbour. You could swim in it in those days, catch oysters and so on. And her father was this strange man, a naturalist, David Stead, who both brought the kids up in this magical world but was also a charming, manipulative, tyrannical man. And she had to get him and the family out of her system, just like Virginia Woolf with, you know, To the Lighthouse.
He also said terribly demeaning things to her. She must have been a brilliant child because
he was
a brilliant writer, and yet he called her ugly or the equivalent.
He was quite cruel, there's no doubt. And so what I'm saying is that she wanted to write about him. She wanted to write about Australian language, Sydney at the time, and so on. And Simon and Schuster here in New York told her that that American readers wouldn't be interested in Australia. So she was, for marketing reasons, rather pressured to set the novel in America. And the nearest she could find to Sydney was Washington and Chesapeake Bay. But, you know, transposing a novel isn't really all that easy. She had to change sharks to marlins, eucalyptus trees to poplars. The characters were always drinking tea, whereas now they had to drink coffee. You have to change the language, the dialect. You have to change the politics. Her father was very impressed by the New South Wales Labor government, and the closest she could think of was the Roosevelt government in the 30s. So she brought the whole novel forward sort of 25 years to the 1930s, you can imagine the changes that involves. And the problem is that critics said this wasn't quite an American novel.
I'll tell you, when I read it years later, when Randall Jarrell got behind it and wrote an introduction to a new edition, and it got a little bit of attention again. What was that, in the 60s?
65, yes.
I didn't think of any of that. I just thought, here is a writer who writes magically, who understands the way people interact, who has really strong psychological insight. And any of those other things just perhaps added to the exotic tone of it for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think it completely transcends nationality. But it's funny, isn't it, how in this global post-national world that you need to categorize a writer, it seems. And there's been endless argument about whether Christina Stead's an Australian writer, which she really isn't, or and whether this novel, it can't be the great Australian novel because it was set in America. And it's not the great American novel, although some critics have said it should be considered one of them, because people say it's flawed because it inevitably doesn't quite capture America. Mind you, Christina Stead did capture American accents beautifully in Letty Fox or The People with the Dogs or other New Yorker novels, but she didn't want to in that novel.
Mm-hmm. Well, those other books all got good reviews, got some bad reviews as well, because she wasn't everyone's taste. But why didn't that lead to more acceptance? Letty Fox, is that still in print? I think
Well, half the time she's not still in print. That's the trouble. You see, The Man Who Loved Children came out in 1940, where there was, you know, people were preoccupied with other things. It was war in Europe. It was coming to America. There was a paper shortage. It was brought out in a cheap edition. And then came... And, you know, during the war, you wanted morale-boosting novels, not really a novel about this strange, flawed family. And then Letty Fox, The People with the Dogs, her other books were excessive. I think that's one of the problems Christina Stead has had, is that she is an excessive writer. She dollops it at you. She drowns you in it. People either love her or they hate her. And bringing books out during the war and then during the McCarthy period, when she was producing this sort of angry, radical stuff, which I personally find immensely compelling, I agree with you. I don't give a damn whether she was Australian or American. But they didn't find publishers.
Well, Letty Fox has been reissued by the New York Review of Books in a wonderful series they have, in which they are reviving books that should be read but have fallen out of print. I'm talking with Hazel Rowley, who wrote a biography of Christina Stead that was published by Henry Holt about 11 years ago. It's a huge book, and that surprises me as well, because as I understand it, Christina Stead was incredibly secretive. She said if you wanted to know her story, just read her fiction.
Yes, she did. It was a bit intimidating writing that biography because it meant following her around the world for a start. She left Australia when she was 26. She went to London. That was a 6-week trip in those days on a boat. She very quickly met the man who would much later become her husband. He would have become her husband earlier, except that he was already married. This was a man called Bill Blake, who was...
William Blake, and he wasn't a poet.
Yes, William Blake. He was born Blake, you know, German-Jewish, changed his name. A wonderful man, just a bit like Nora for James Joyce. William Blake, appears in Stead's fiction time and again. And then they went together to America in the 30s. They were here in New York. They loved it. They were probably at their happiest in the 30s and 40s in New York. But they were on the left during the McCarthy period, like many other left-wingers. They left for Europe. And then, of course, Europe, too, was on the downturn. British publishers didn't have any money. American publishers weren't interested in books that she was now setting in England. And Christina Stead went off the map. And, you know, this was very cruel because she really had quite a spectacular beginning. And then suddenly, in the 50s, she faced, you know, the worst possible thing for a writer to face, which is not the blank page. It's blanket rejection.
And so she, with that blanket rejection, she had a writer's block for a time.
She didn't, actually. That was the myth for a long time because she didn't publish anything between 1952, which was that beautiful New York novel set also in the Catskills called The People with the Dogs, one of my favorites. And then there was a gap, a terrible gap, right up until 1965, which saw Holt, Reinhardt and Winston reissue The Man Who Loved Children with this introduction by Randall Jarrell, who calls his introduction an unread book and who writes rather... I don't know that he entirely did her a favour with that introduction, actually. He talks as if that was her only great novel and that there wouldn't, and that there wasn't going to be another one. And then came other novels, but she didn't have a writer's block. She was writing prolifically all those years. People were rejecting her books.
Didn't she also have a private scandal? She is a leftist with a banker who is a Marxist. And then there was wasn't there some kind of a stock problem that didn't help her at all?
Yes, although I know actually that was a scandal for William Blake for a bit, that he was involved in a bank that went bankrupt in Paris and so on. But no, I don't think that affected Christina Stead's reputation.
Many critics have described her fiction as harsh or savage and full of unpleasant characters. Was she an angry person?
Well, she became, she already was an angry person. It's I can't pretend otherwise. But she became more so, I think, when she had to face this terrible rejection. She said earlier on in her life to a friend that there was nothing that she wanted more than to write something so good that nobody could deny it. And she never had that satisfaction. She wrote novels that were brilliant, in my opinion. And I'm not just wanting to defend the subject of my biography. Angela Carter, the British novelist, said, she's now dead, that she thought Christina Stead's British novels written in the 60s, Miss Herbert and a book that was in England called Cotter's England, that was here called Dark Places of the Heart, Angela Carter thought they were more brilliant than The Man Who Loved Children. She rates them far higher than Doris Lessing's The Golden Notebook.
Yes, exactly.
She says that nobody wrote about social relations and families and sexual politics. She wouldn't use those words, but nobody wrote as insightfully and as brilliantly and as seductively as Christina Stead, but that her fiction was angry and that it was craggy and that people, you know, couldn't quite take it.
Well, you quote her as talking about the influence of her father, the naturalist. She said, when you're a little girl and you look in an aquarium and you see fish doing this and that, you don't criticize and say they should do something else. And that's the sense you get when you're reading her as well.
Yes, she was a naturalist in that sense. She wasn't a naturalist writer because there's lots of bits of expressionism and surrealism and fairy tale and Edgar Allan Poe type gothic and a bit of Arabian Nights sort of mixed in. She's a very uncategorizable writer, but she was a naturalist in the sense that she looked at life and it's not that she didn't judge it, but that She observed brilliantly, just like her naturalist father.
There are some attitudes about people and women in particular that come across as surprising. She once said during an interview, while there's a man left on earth, I'll never be a feminist.
It's unfortunate, that remark. She became more and more... she presented herself more and more as a woman who didn't like women, as a woman who was crazy about men.
And yet she left Sydney because there weren't enough opportunities for women there.
Yes, exactly. And in her fiction, too, she writes beautifully about women, being a woman. She writes Letty Fox, set in 1930s and 40s New York, is a wonderful depiction written in the first person from the point of view of a young New York woman growing up among, you know, in the trend of psychoanalysis and the preoccupations of the 30s and 40s, leftism, left politics and so on. But she understood women beautifully. I don't know. I think it was because she was so ugly, or at least her father told her that she had...
He called her piggy, but the pictures in the book, in your book, she's not a Hollywood beauty, but she's a perfectly fine-looking person.
You know, what your father tells you has an awful lot of influence. She always felt ugly, and I think that's why she needed to... it was one of her neuroses. She needed to impress men, and she went around saying that she had much more time for men. It's simply not true, really.
Well, how old was she when she died?
In her 80s, 83.
So she lived a long and full life and wrote many books. If you had your druthers, what would people read?
Well, I suppose I would ask them to read The Man Who Loved Children because that's the most famous, but I wouldn't want them to stop there, and it's sad that she's connected so much with that novel. I personally love the sequel, published in 1942 with the rather corny title For Love Alone, but it's a beautiful depiction of Sydney and it's also an autobiographical novel set in this time she's an adolescent young woman. She writes about growing up in hot Sydney, steamy, the sexual desire that grows with the midday sun, but on top of this sensual place that was Sydney, subtropical climate, is this overlay of British colonial Puritanism. You know, the young girls all had to go to school with thick denier stockings on and marry as a virgin or else you threw yourself over the cliffs. And
well, she used that book as an opportunity to write about an early love affair that went wrong, a nasty lover.
man who she followed to England on a ship, the 6-week trip. And the second half of the novel is set in London and shows him, you know, ditching her.
Well, we will post some of the books that Christina Stead wrote on our website. And meanwhile, I want to thank you so much for participating in our summer reading series of underappreciated writers. Hazy Rowley talking about Christina Stead, the subject of a biography that she published in 1994.
Thanks for promoting a wonderful writer. Thanks, Leonard.